IB Nation, welcome back to another episode of the Irish Breakdown Podcast. It is Tuesday, February 18th, and the offseason is rolling right along. Hope everybody had a good weekend. It's been a second since we've been live, so we are excited to bring you guys some awesome content today. We've been cranking things out on the board and different articles, other pieces of content, but we're excited to be back in front of everybody to talk about Notre Dame's offseason and how it's been progressing. So, Brian, in today's show, we're going to be talking about a handful of different things. We're going to start out by talking about overviewing some of the changes this team has gone through in the offseason so far, more from the coaching staff perspective. It's been a lot of different staff changes. We're going to kind of recap everything, and then we're going to talk about is Notre Dame better off now? Are they worse or the same? We're going to give some reasons why, and then some potential changes that we might be waiting on. And then after that, we're going to dive into the offensive line. So far, we've been diving through the different position groups. We've talked quarterback. We've talked receiver a lot this offseason. Now we're going to take a deep dive into the offensive line. The first part, we're going to be talking about an honest recap of the 2024 season. We're going to talk about the good. We're going to talk about the not so good, which will transition nicely into what we expect for the 2025 offensive line. The offensive line is going to be key. We're going to talk through what they need to do to be successful for Notre Dame to make another appearance and the college football playoff semifinals to give themselves a shot at another national title. And then at the end of all of that today, Brian, we're going to do a mailbag. So everybody throughout the show, please be sure that you get your questions in, whether it's something that pops in your head at the time or if it's something that's been marinating a little bit over the long weekend, it's felt like. So make sure you get your questions in throughout the show. We're going to do a mailbag for about an hour after the show ends, and then obviously Super Chats get bumped to the top. But before we start all that, Brian, how you doing today, man?
I am great. I'm excited, man. Obviously, absence makes the heart grow fonder, and I had a little absence from y'all yesterday. It was good. I had to, you know, sometimes, especially this time of year, we're finishing up taxes and a lot of different things, and so sometimes just the business side of running Irish Breakdown kind of requires a little bit more attention, so I had to get some of that stuff caught up, and I'm working on our new schedule of kind of, not our new schedule, but just kind of plotting out what we're going to discuss here these next few months, and some different ideas we have and getting everybody on the same page. So had to get all that taken care of. So that's what yesterday was all about. Couldn't do it on Sunday because, well, you know, I'm trying to have more Sabbath days, but also Sunday was, you know, my wife's birthday. So I was a little busy with that on Sunday. But I'm back here, man, rocking and rolling. I'm ready to go. This is going to be an interesting conversation in my opinion, Trev, because, you know, look, when you have the success Notre Dame had, you're going to lose coaches. The way to maintain excellence as a program is that you continue to make sure when you lose coaches that you don't take a step back with their replacements. There's this notion, I think, that we have, and it's understandable with Notre Dame fans because these moves in the past have been so hit or miss. You know, like when you lose Bob Diaco, who did I thought a great job at Notre Dame, and you know, you replace him with Brian Van Gorder, which is a train wreck, and then he gets replaced with Mike Elko, which is a great hire. You know, and then you replace him with Clark Lee, which is a great hire. Then Marcus Freeman, which is a great hire. And then Al Golden, which was a great hire. And you got to keep that rolling. And then Chad Bowden did a great job. Can you replace the job he did? Dylan McCullough's an elite running backs coach. Could you replace that? They've done some analysts off the field hires that have been interesting because that's a group of people that don't get as much credit because in the past they didn't have as big of a say in what was going on. A lot of them was just like doing some, you know, future analysis or holding bags or, you know, helping out whenever you could. You weren't really important. Well, now analysts are doing so much more and they're being asked to do so much more that they're how well you do there has a big say on who you're going to be. So as a football team and how well you're coached. So there's just a lot of different things going on right now. Retaining as many of your coaches as you can is important. We'll talk about that a little bit during the show. And then of course, the offensive line needs to be elite this year, Trev. That's there's no doubt. I mean, if this team is going to get back to the national title game and have a chance to win it this time, the offensive line has to get back to where we perceive it is when it's at its best. It has to be elite. It has to be one of the three or four best offensive lines in the country. And more importantly, it has to be there when it matters most because, you know, it wasn't always the case this season. And there's a lot of different reasons why, and we'll get into those, but it's an important topic. It really is. And I'm excited to talk about both of these. And we talked about quarterback. We've talked about safeties, receivers, and we'll have more on the receivers as we get into this. But I really think this offensive line conversation is huge and things that we're excited about, things that we're concerned about that we're going to dive into, and just trying to have an honest conversation. Because I feel like with this offensive line talk, Treb, there's a lack of we're doing so much of this. Well, I either have to support everything as is and gloss over any issues, and it's elite and it's great and it's this, or it's I do nothing but criticize, and we're not having an honest discussion. There were some really good things that we saw from the O-line this year, players-wise, coaching-wise, and some troubling things that we saw this year, player-wise and coaching-wise. And you're not a bad fan if you're like, yeah, it needs to get better from a coaching standpoint, or hey, maybe that wasn't good enough. And I feel like we're in these really weird, like cultish camps now where you have to support everything that the coaches say or do, or you're a bad fan. And it's like, no, I'm not a cult member, so I don't have to agree with anything anybody says. But you also don't need to be that person who's like unnecessarily critical of everything. Let me always look to find fault in something. And I think there's a really healthy balance, especially the offensive line, where I feel like that's where there's been the most of this push-pull of those two camps, right? And we're going to have an honest conversation today about what went well, what still needs to be better, and how those things can kind of factor in to get the 25 offensive line in the position where it should dominate. And that's the one thing that I think both camps will agree on is 25 needs to be dominant and has a chance to be dominant. The question is going to be, can it get there? So that's what I'm looking forward to talking about. I always love some offensive line play. But these are going to be fun talks. And obviously, if you guys want, and also just so you guys know, mailbags don't always just have to be questions. If you got something you want to say, hey, listen, here's my thoughts on this, or I have this opinion or that opinion, you go ahead and put that in there too. Just still put MB on there, and we'll be able to tell the difference between a question and a comment. But get those in, and it doesn't have to just be about the topic today, but I like hearing from you guys. When we're talking about these different things, I want to hear what you guys think about it. And here, when we talk about this coach leaving and that coach arriving, we want to hear your thoughts too. That's what makes the chat fun. Sometimes they go off these things where they're just talking about something that has nothing to do with the show, and it's distracting because we're trying to stay engaged on the chat as well. But it's also because I get disappointed because I want to hear what you guys think about things too. That's part of the fun of doing the show is like, hey, here's where we're at, but what do you guys think? And so I'm also looking forward to hearing some of that feedback as well. And it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. So Trev, I'm ready to rock and roll. And I think diving into this coach's conversation is going to be a good place to start because we're not completely done yet. But we have an idea of there's still some analyst hires that need to be made, but all the big decisions have been made with the exception of one, and we can at least talk enough about what that needs to be to kind of get an idea of where things are headed with the coaching staff. And then we're talking on-field and off-field coaching staff.
So let's jump in head first here, Brian, and talk about the first change. And it was one of the bigger, if not the biggest change of the offseason. Defensive coordinator Al Golden departs to head off to the NFL to be the new defensive coordinator for the Cincinnati Bengals. And it came at a time very fresh off of the loss in the national championship game, which I think for me personally, and it sounds like everybody else in the chat, it kind of hit a little bit harder where 72 hours after Notre Dame loses the national championship, they lose their all-star defensive coordinator. But
was it even that? It may have even was official, but we kind of felt like the next day. I mean, there was already stuff coming out before the game where it's we knew it was going to happen, but it still kind of kind of stung. You know, it's like when it becomes official, it's like, man, it's like I now know what salt in the wounds feels like.
I hear you. But it didn't take Marcus Freeman long to find Al Golden's replacement. He found that in Chris Ash, who has spent the last couple seasons in the NFL. Couple is a position coach with the Las Vegas Raiders and most recently on the Jaguars front office staff. But he does have experience as a defensive coordinator in 2020 at Texas, as well as being the defensive coordinator for the 2014 and the 2015 Ohio State teams and a handful of other schools before that, Wisconsin. He was the head coach at Rutgers, not really weighing too much in his experience and his qualifications to be a defensive coordinator. But Brian, that's where we're at. Chris Ash was hired to replace Al Golden. So when we talk through this replacement, and this is one that we've covered pretty consistently throughout the offseason between Bisel Holds and mailbags, where do you start when you look at this one?
Well, look, we've talked about our opinion of the hire. That's not the point of what we're going to discuss today. But I did want to point out something because there has been this talk kind of going around. I had even a good friend of mine the other day called me and pretty connected to the program. And he talked about, like, you know, do you really feel like Notre Dame is too reactionary with these hires? And one of them was the Chris Ash thing. And as if, like, he's like, he makes the comment. And again, from an outside standpoint, I get this point of view. And that's why we want to address it, not as a criticism of the perception, but just to give some clarity to the situation, which is there's this thought, like, you know, was Marcus Freeman really not prepared for Al Golden to leave? And that's how he got, quote unquote, stuck with Chris Ash. And my comment is, the thing we have to understand is we all have our opinions of whether or not Chris Ash is a good hire or not. And ultimately, we're going to find out over the next couple years. And I don't even think just 1 year is going to tell us, because we could go out there and watch Notre Dame put an elite defense on the field. And it doesn't necessarily mean that this is a great hire in long term, because you and I are of the belief that you've got to be a, you know, complete idiot to screw this defense up in 2025. If you can't put a top 10 defense on the field in 2025 with the talent they got coming back, you're not a very good football coach. So even if there is a success, does that mean that it can be long-term success? We're going to find out over the course of time. And the one thing we can all agree on is that we all hope this ends up being a great hire. And as I look at a lot of the hires that Marcus Freeman made, as more decisions have been made this offseason, it's not that my opinion of this move with Chris Ash changes, because I still hold the same opinion of Chris Ash, because it's based off breaking down what he's done and analyzing what he's done. Nothing is going to change that until I see new evidence. But when you watch Marcus Freeman kind of hit home run after home run after home run after home run following the Chris Ash hire, it kind of says, okay, I feel how I feel about this Chris Ash hire. But man, Marcus Freeman's been on a roll these last two off seasons of hiring coaches. Maybe he sees something we don't. And while it's not going to change my spoken words about it, because I can only be honest about what I know and what I see, it does maybe give me a little bit more peace that I might be wrong about this one. And this is one of those instances where I want to be wrong. And that's kind of how I feel about it, Trevor. I don't know how you feel, but like, as the more he's made moves this offseason, the more I'm like, okay, I have my opinion's not going to change, but I'm more, maybe optimistic that I'm going to be wrong about how this move is going to impact the program.
I'm in a similar boat for reasons along those lines. For the Marcus Freeman's track record so far this postseason with hires and what he did this past postseason with hires, it kind of puts some of my reservations at bay a little bit. But also you go and look at the remainder of the defensive coordinator landscape, like the big names. You know, you have guys like DJ Durkin signing an extension at Auburn. You have Ohio State going and hiring Matt Patricia. You want to talk about a defensive coordinator hire that raises a lot of question marks. I thought I had mine with Chris Ash. Matt Patricia coming in as a defensive coordinator also raises a bunch of different questions. Another topic for another day, perhaps. But you go through and you look at the track record of what Marcus Freeman has done, compounded with what has happened in the remaining landscape of college football. Yes, Tom Allen is now at Penn State Tom Allen is now at Clemson and Jim Knowles is now at Penn State. I understand that those are some of the bigger names. Tom Allen was going back home. He was going back to where he was comfortable. I understand that. It would have made no sense for a guy like Tom Allen to go to South Bend, Indiana. At that point, he should have just stayed in Happy Valley. And you go through and you look at Jim Knowles heading off to Penn State, wanted to stay within conference. He's going to somewhere that has a good foundation for a defense, and he did his job at Ohio State. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of other reasons behind the curtain that we may or may not see, because I am not an Ohio State football insider. I'm a Notre Dame football insider, so there's probably some question marks that we don't know. But you go in through and you look at what the rest of the landscape of college football has shown, that has also, on top of all the reasons that you said, Brian, those are all the reasons why I feel a little bit more, I'm going to say open to this hire, because before it was very, why didn't you make this move? This is what made the most sense. It felt like you made this move extremely quickly, which does beg the question to your friend's point that reached out to you. This move was made so quickly that was it very reactionary or was it very planned? Not saying that Chris Ash was receiving phone calls.
And that's the thing. I know for a fact that there was at least one other coach that Marcus Freeman reached out to and was sort of his top guy. And we've all heard it. It's Jim Leonard. And then he turned down overtures from Ohio State also. So he didn't just turn down Marcus Freeman. He also turned down Ohio State. And then he quickly moved on to Chris Ash. So we can discuss and debate whether it's the right move or the right hire, or was it smart or not smart or anything in between. But what it wasn't was reactionary from the sense of what it was intended. Obviously, when you get turned down by a coach, your reaction is to go to somebody else. So in the truest technical sense, it was reactionary. But my point is, reactionary is more of like a, oh, shoot, I wasn't prepared for that. Now I got to scramble to make a move. And that's how the question was intended. But the reality is this was a calculated move by Marcus Freeman. We'll debate whether it was correct or not correct, but it wasn't reactionary. This is, here's my top guy or two. If that doesn't work, this is where I'm going. And this is a guy that Marcus Freeman was a defensive coordinator in the Big Ten at the same time he was a defensive coordinator in the Big Ten, Marcus Freeman being at Purdue and then Chris Ash being at Wisconsin and then, of course, Ohio State. So there's some familiarity with what he does. And so that's the thing that I think we just need to understand about this hire is it wasn't reactionary. It wasn't a panic hire. Marcus Freeman, and we've seen this with other hires, he has been in no rush to make the GM hire. He's in no rush to make the recruiting coordinator hire. He wasn't in a rush to make the D coordinator hire. He wasn't in a rush to make the running back hire, even though they all happened quickly. It's just he knew who his targets were. He went after him and got him. And then we'll find out down the road if these were the right hires. And that's something I do think we at least need to give him credit for, is we'll find out whether it was the right move or not. But these were calculated decisions by Marcus Freeman. And that's a good thing. It wasn't a, oh, shoot, I got turned down by Jim Leonard. What do I do now? You know, it was like this is where I'm going. And I think that is still something that we're going to do. Cause here's the reality. Here's what we know for a fact, Trev. Here's the one thing we can all agree on. This hire is going to have a huge impact on whether or not Notre Dame can continue to ascend under Marcus Freeman. The coordinator hires have to be home runs. You can't miss on those, especially the defensive one, because that's what you say your program is going to be about. This has to be a big hire. This has to be an important hire. And it can't be, well, you know, if it's not a good hire, Freeman can help with. No. He needs to be the head football coach, not somebody who's got to rescue the defensive coordinator he hired who struggled. It's got to be the right hire. We're going to find out if it is, but that's what's on the line here with this hire. And I think we can all at least have a sense of confidence that we all believe that Marcus Freeman's a pretty smart defensive guy, as when we understand that this was not a panic move or a reactionary move, a move where he's settling, but this is where he wanted to go once his top target left. I think that there's at least a sense of, okay, I have trust in him. So I'm optimistic that it's going to work out, even though I'm going to be honest about my opinions of Chris Ash. I have a little bit more confidence, and you nailed on something too, Trev. Once Matt Patricia got hired at Ohio State, I'm like, you know what? I feel way better about the Chris Ash hire. Because my thing on Chris Ash is he's not a bad coordinator. I question if he's a championship coordinator. Yes, he's got a championship. But if you can't run a solid defense when you have the talent they had on their team in 2015, you need to find a new profession. It's just that, is he that kind of guy in the modern era? That's the other part of it too. Even if we granted that he was elite back at Wisconsin, Ohio State, and I used to be very high on Chris Ash as an assistant coach, I heard some things about him and how he interacts and treats people that has me concerned, but we all have those moments. I talked about him in our last show about how, boy, I wish I would have conducted myself with more maturity or patience or whatever the case may be back in when I first got started into this, and I wasn't 21 years old. You know what I mean? Like I was in my 30s, late 20s and 30s when I was really getting into this kind of stuff. So we all have those moments where we can bounce back and recover. And I hope that coach has been able to do that, but it's more so also the adjustment to the modern game. Cause he's been a coordinator for 1 year in the last decade and it didn't go well. And we've talked about some reasons why it's hard to really gauge that. He was taking over a bad defense during the COVID year where they had no offseason, couldn't do install, couldn't do this, couldn't do that. But you have those questions of, okay, can he really adjust to the modern game? Bob Diaco's big failure as a defensive coordinator post Notre Dame was that he couldn't adjust his scheme to the modern game. He was a 3-4 guy. He can handle, back in 2010 to 2012 when Notre Dame had good defenses every year, he can handle Michigan's offense. He can handle Michigan State's offense. He can handle the things that a lot of teams were doing because they were line up and play. He could play his 3-4 defense. And now you can't just line up in a base 3-4 defense and play that level of big boy football. Purdue tried it this year and they got annihilated because you can't play that kind of football anymore. The game's changed, not as your base 3-down defense. And Bob Diaco just never adjusted to the modern game. Now, he still has chances. He just got hired this offseason as a linebackers coach at North Carolina. So there's always those opportunities of that, but that's been an issue for him. And we're going to find out if Chris Ash has done that. And with Chris Ash, it's not so much we've seen him fail at it. It's just we haven't seen him do it in so long that we just don't know. But I have to think that him and Marcus Freeman had some of those conversations where Marcus Freeman felt good about that. Now we got to see if it's going to get played out, because ultimately this is the biggest hire he made this offseason. This is the biggest hire he made this offseason. It's going to have the most immediate impact on this team. If Mike Martin's a grand slam home run hire, it's going to have very little impact on the 2025 football team. Very little. Mike Martin is going to have a huge immediate impact on like recruiting and the transfer portal and things that will affect future teams, obviously, and then keeping this team together. But unless, it comes down to after the – well, I should say there will be some aspects of Mike Martin that will impact, the portal of guys not going into the portal. But for the most part, his big impact will be on next season. This one is going to have a big impact on this upcoming season. And that's why it's important. And so is the other one, Trev, which just got officially announced by Notre Dame as we started our show. We knew this was going to happen. Penn State's already replaced him. So it was going to happen. But obviously Notre Dame officially announced that Juwan Sider is the new running backs coach, which is the other big hire that Marcus Freeman made on from a coaching staff standpoint this offseason.
Going to be a huge impact. I mean, outside of the Chris Ash hire, this is kind of the next hire that you're going to see immediate impact in 2025 for. Marcus Freeman was tasked with replacing Dylan McCullough, who made the decision to go and follow Chip Kelly to the Las Vegas Raiders for the
head. He went with Pete Carroll more than Chip Kelly. It was more about Pete Carroll than it was Chip Kelly. Yeah,
sure. I'm not saying it was four, but he very closely behind Chip Kelly went to the Las Vegas Raiders to be on Pete Carroll's newly rebuilt coaching staff, which left Notre Dame with a hold. I mean, everybody was boasting, us included, about how successful Notre Dame's running back room was in 2024, and they returned every single person from that unit outside of Devin Ford for 2025. So this hire for this position group specifically was a monumental hire. And they had to find somebody who knows how to balance a deep running back rotation. Penn State's coming off of a year where they had two running backs go over 1,000 yards in Catron Allen and Nicholas Singleton. Notre Dame has a lot of mouths to feed in that room. Jeremiah Love and J.D. Price for starters. Now you have Aeneas Williams, who showed his worth in the postseason. Kedren Young is going to be fighting for more carries. Jabron Payne could potentially come back healthy this year. Nolan James is coming in as a true freshman. And Notre Dame has kind of started to string together a streak of playing good true freshman running backs. I would not be surprised if Nolan James adds his name to that group of people. So it's going to be interesting to see how Juwan Siders manages that. But Marcus Freeman needed to find somebody, one, that was proven at that position, and he was at Penn State, knows how to rotate a group of running backs with a lot of talent who all need to see the field, and they had to find somebody that's an elite recruiter. Some impact might be felt initially with some of the names on the board, but that impact's going to be seen more throughout his tenure at Notre Dame than just outside of right now to August 31st, but there will still be an impact nonetheless. So, Brian, when you go through and you look at the hire of Juwan Siders that Notre Dame just made official, when he's replacing Dylan McCullough, big shoes to fill, as you and I both know. How do we feel about this hire, man?
really big shoes. I mean, look, when you lose a coach like Thielen McCullough, I don't know that there's a, you know, hey, are you going to upgrade at the position? It's like, that's not really the point. And yeah, I've been asked this question a lot. Who's better, Thielen McCullough or Jawan Sider? Who's better between those two and Tony Alford? And it's like, that's not how I look at it. It's like, are you elite or are you not? And I don't look at it as like, well, this guy's number one and this guy's number two and this guy's number three. I don't really care about that because it's hard to compare that because you're at different places with different circumstances. But here's what I know. Notre Dame lost an outstanding football coach in Thielen McCullough. They lost an outstanding recruiter when Thielen McCullough left. They lost an outstanding mentor to young men when Thielen McCullough left. And to me, all three of those things are vitally important. Now, I don't know a lot about Jawan Sider as a mentor to young men. I've heard he's a really good guy. I've heard he cares about those things. I just can't speak to that one way or the other because I just don't know him well enough and I'm not inside that program. I have talked to people around the program that have said really good guy and have said all the right things, but now we just need to see it. So I'm not commenting on that other than he's got to be good there because Thielen McCullough was great there. That's as much about developing. I've said so many times, when the players believe in you off the field, they will give you everything they've got on the field. But you look at the track record and you say, okay, with what I'm hearing and then what we see on the field, you kind of feel like there's a really good chance that part's going to be there. But here's what we do know. He's an outstanding running backs coach for what happens on the field, and he's an outstanding recruiter for what he's brought into that program. And when you talk about like ranking the top running back coaches, I don't rank them, but I know there's a group of guys that are considered the best of the best, guys that I consider the best of the best, and Jawan Sider's in that conversation. You know, when Thielen McCullough left, I had a couple people ask me, like, you know, if you're Marcus Freeman, do you talk to Jawan Sider? And I was like, well, yeah, you talk to him. You know, and then when he tells you no, you move on to the next guy. Why is he going to leave Penn State to come to Notre Dame? He's got a great situation there. Well, I'm glad Marcus Freeman made the call because this was a big-time home run hire. When you lose a coach like Thielen McCullough and you feel like your replacement is on that level of big time, and I don't care whether you're one, two, or three, it's big time and big time. That's what matters. You lost a big-time coach who did great things for your program, and you're replacing him with a big-time coach who did great things for the program he just left. And to me, that's an absolute grand slam home run hire. Did they upgrade, downgrade? I don't know all that. But what I know is they lost an elite coach and they replaced him with an elite coach. And that is savvy work done there by Marcus Freeman. And he did it quick. Now, the reason he did it quick is because, again, he has a list of guys he was going to turn to. Thielen McCullough is always the guy that you have to be concerned about leaving in the offseason because you know he's coveted. Because he's an elite coach every offseason. And Thielen McCullough has turned down NFL offers every year that he's been, including when he got hired by Notre Dame, there was immediately NFL teams that started coming after him again. And he turned them down. And he turned them down after the 2022 season. He turned them down after the 2023 season. And he turned down jobs in this past offseason. But when Pete Carroll came calling, that was too much. And there was a connection there. He did sort of a mentorship, not a mentorship, but like they have this thing where college coaches will work with NFL teams. And he did a program with Pete Carroll when he was with the Seahawks. His dad coached with Pete Carroll for a while. We did confirm that it was with the Seahawks or he was with the Seahawks. We did confirm that it was with Pete Carroll all the way around. And so there was a clear connection there. And Pete Carroll's a Hall of Fame coach. I mean, you say whatever you want, but the guy won multiple national titles in college and won a Super Bowl in the NFL and was in three total Super Bowls or two? Is it two? I know he's with they played the Patriots, and I know that they played the they beat the Broncos. But let me go look at that.
Steelers.
That was, I think, under Mike Holmgren. I think that was Mike Holmgren, but I could be wrong on that. I'm gonna go look at that real quick because he was with the Seahawks from 2010 to 2023, won a Super Bowl. Let's see here in his tenure, they got to the Super Bowl. Won two national titles, got to the Super Bowl with Seattle twice. It was back-to-back years. So they made it in 2012. They went to the divisional game, won the Super Bowl in 13, went back to the Super Bowl in 14, were in the playoffs five of the next six years, and finished with 137 and 89 record with the Seahawks, went 10-9 in the postseason. he's a Hall of Fame coach. And when you look at the entirety of kind of what he's done on college and the NFL. So, and now that's one of those ones where it's like, and it's the Raiders. I mean, look, as a Broncos fan, I hate the Raiders. And so it's like, I hope Coach McCullough's running backs go for 200 yards a game during their 0-17 season. That's kind of how I feel about it. You know what I mean? Like, that's how I feel about the Raiders. But it's the Raiders, man. It's one of those iconic franchises. And it just was an opportunity too good to pass up. And so Marcus Freeman wisely always had sort of a, here's my list of guys I'm turning to if Dylan McCullough leaves. And I put on the message board, I put an intel piece on how it all went down. Dylan McCullough did it the right way. Pete Carroll did it the right way. And then Marcus Freeman did it the right way. In that there was a question, hey, are you interested? Yes, immediately get off the phone, call Marcus Freeman. Hey, coach, I'm interested in him. Do I have your blessing to talk to him? Coach Freeman gave it. And then they did a formal interview, and the rest is kind of history. So I gained a lot of respect for all three of those men and how this process went down. But Marcus Freeman's tasked with, okay, I lost a great coach. Now I got to turn to it, and immediately turn to Juwan Sider. And I'm surprised that the interest was there. I just assume, like, you've got this great situation coming back at Penn State. Why would you want to leave? But there's a lot of different reasons why we don't need to get into, but there's few jobs that can get you to leave a situation like that. And Notre Dame is one of those jobs just in general. But when you say I'm not losing anything from a talent standpoint, and maybe I'm getting a slight upgrade in talent on top of all the other things that make Notre Dame a better job, it was impossible to pass up, I believe, is just what it comes down to it. And look, you're at a place long enough, Trev, there eventually comes a point in time where it's like, I've gone as far as I can go in this at this place, and it's time for a fresh start. And I think that played a role in it well. But at the end of the day, here's what matters. He made a home run hire for running backs coach. And this offense is not going to miss a beat when it comes to the staff from what it was. And that's not acting as if Dylan McCullough's easy to replace. He's not, which is what makes this such an impressive move by Marcus Freeman. To be able to lose a coach like that and replace him with a coach like Juwan Sider is big time.
If you wanted an example of Marcus Freeman's confidence in himself and his coaching staff and his philosophy, it's the entire process of the Dylan McCullough hire, in my opinion. And those are the things that you love to hear about. Why do people want to come work for Marcus Freeman? Well, there's a lot of stories about, you know, he's an up-and-coming coach. He works really well with his staff. He's a family-first guy. The players, the kids love him. But supporting your coaching staff goes a really, really long way. It would have been really easy for Marcus Freeman, a guy who loves Dylan McCullough and has a good relationship with him, who has given Notre Dame's running back room a lot of success. It would have been easy for him to say, do I have your blessing for this? No, man, I need you here at Notre Dame. But he wants not just his players, but the coaches that work with him and work under him to go off and be successful in their own careers, whether that be at Notre Dame or not. And then to have the confidence in yourself to go out and meet and interview and get a guy like Juwan Sider, I think is huge. So this entire hiring process gave me even more confidence moving forward that Marcus Freeman's just that dude right now for Notre Dame. Everybody talks about being an up-and-coming coach in college football. And a lot of that is the product on the field, but how do you get the product on the field? By doing things the right way, Sunday to Friday, by doing the right things in the offseason with your coaching staff, and that's what Marcus Freeman continued to do. So
now, look, if Dylan McCullough wanted to go to the Raiders, there was nothing that Marcus Freeman could do about it. That's not the point. The point is, but you can do it. There's a right way and a wrong way to go about it, and I think they all three did it the right way. And that's the coaching profession. That's the reality. You give me and the thing I like about Marcus Freeman is like, look, I don't care if you're with me for a year, 2 years, three, but when you're here, you give me everything you've got. And Dylan McCullough did that as in every phase, as a coach, as a recruiter, and as a mentor of young men. And he did it with integrity. I mean, we've shared stories about how that has come to fruit and how that paid off for Notre Dame from a recruiting standpoint. And then be able to go out there and hire a guy with a similar reputation. Because, like, what's the big concern when you lose a guy like Dylan McCullough? All right, well, he had to work his tail off to keep everybody on the roster to, you know, make sure guys weren't leaving, because I can assure you that Notre Dame's entire backfield was getting offers to leave. Not just Jeremiah Love or Jadarian Price. All of them were getting offers to leave. And he kept them all here. So then the concern is, well, you know, you got a new runner. You're going to get a new coach. If you don't make a good big splash, it's going to be like, well, screw this. I'm not. But when you make a move like Juwan Sider, obviously he'll have to connect with the new players and all that type of stuff. But from a reputation standpoint, I think it gives a little peace of mind to the coaches or to the players and their families that, oh, man, Marcus Freeman is making big moves. And there was no downtime. I mean, Dylan made his decision on, like, what, Monday or Tuesday? And by Sunday, we had word that this was the move. And it was like, man, so there was no time to allow other people get in there really and warp their minds about the uncertainty of what's coming next. It was like, before you could even do that, boom, we're not only got a new coach, it's a home run. So I just think that adds to the success of this offseason. And you know, we'll move to the analysts next. But obviously, we put an intel piece on the board yesterday that, you know, Mike Mickens put an Instagram post out a couple days ago. Trev, you and I were talking about it a little bit yesterday, and we're like, I hope it means what it looks like it means. Talk to a source, it definitely does. Mike Mickens is staying at Notre Dame. That was another big win, because by not promoting him to D coordinator, Marcus Freeman took a big risk that he wasn't going to lose Mike Mickens this offseason. And Mike Mickens has decided to stay. He had been courted by other programs, but he's decided to stay for this next season, which is huge for Notre Dame, because if you lost Al Golden and Mike Mickens in one offseason, that would have been incredibly challenging to overcome. Incredibly challenging to overcome. But now the only question is, for this to be a success, does Chris Ash show the same reverence and respect to Mike Mickens that Al Golden did? That's going to be a big question mark to how well this works. Does Chris Ash say, I got great resources here, let me use them? Or does he come in saying, it's my way and I'm the dude and I'm all this and I'm all those other type of things? So I'm not saying he's going to do that at all. I'm simply saying that is going to be what determines if this ends up being great, that these two guys are going to be able to work well together. It's going to be that. It's going to be how well those two guys can work well together and say, hey, let's bring some great things to this program for however long we're together. That's going to be a big part of, does all this work for me?
Sure. I mean, real quick, going back to our conversation around Chris Ash, another reason why I am more open to this hire is because every single position coach comes back on the defensive side as well. As of today, Al Washington's still there. Max Bull is still there. Mike Mickens is still there. Marty Biagi did some stuff with the safeties this past season under the, you know, the coaching of Mike Mickens. But all of them return to the defensive staff as of today. And that's another reason why I do feel pretty good or better about the Chris Ash situation. Now, moving on.
The whole freaking offseason. I mean, honestly, keeping Mike Mickens is huge. I mean, absolutely huge, because like Dylan McCullough did a great job, but we've seen running back coaches have success at Notre Dame. He replaced a pretty good coach himself. And then there was the Audrey Denson tenure, which wasn't great, but he replaced Tony Alford, who did a great job. I mean, it's not, I thought Bernie Parmalee did some nice things back under Charlie Weiss. It's like Notre Dame has had some success there in the past. Secondary has been a different animal. It hasn't been a strength very much for Notre Dame. And the way that Mike Mickens has completely turned that thing around, you're almost like, normally when you think of like irreplaceable coaches, say to a degree, there's no such thing, but you know, you can get close to it. You think of like coordinators and offensive line coaches and stuff like that. That's Mike Mickens for Notre Dame. You know, again, no one's completely replaceable, but it's a much tougher task to replace him, and you don't have to worry about that for another year. So that's big news for Notre Dame, being able to keep Mike Mickens. Because to your point, you're adding Chris Ash to a staff that also has an elite secondary coach, and you know, has a quality defensive line coach and an up and coming guy as a linebackers coach. And then of course, Marcus Freeman's made a couple other moves this offseason, Trev, which we'll just kind of quickly mention. Notre Dame's lost some analysts. There's still some analyst roles and some GA roles to fill. They've lost several coaches, which is you're going to have a lot of turnover in that department. They lost their receivers guy to the NFL. They lost one of their DB guys. They lost a D-line guy or a defensive assistant, Mike Moon. And they've made two moves this week. I don't think either of them are necessarily official yet, but they're both going to happen. And first one was reported earlier in the week, and that is Javon Coughlin, who was an assistant secondary coach with West Virginia the last couple of years, who's had a pretty good secondary. Reached out to a buddy of mine who is close to that program. Here's what he had to say to me. I asked him about Javon Coughlin. He said, great recruiter. He says he's very young, still a lot to learn, but I think the kid has a very bright future. And so he's going to be brought in, and he's going to get a chance to learn under Mike Mickens and Chris Ash. Heard a lot of good things about him. Again, I love the part how he's known as a really good recruiter and, you know, up-and-coming coach. That was a good one. And then the other one is they hired Dom Spalding, who's going to work. He's going to be an analyst working with the wide receivers. That was announced today, or reported today by John Bryce of Football Scoop. John Bryce had that, right? Isn't that? I think that's who I retweet. Yes, John Bryce had that one. And it was with Northwestern last year, spent several years with the Youngstown State. These are both guys that have coaching experience. They're not just new guys. They're not guys fresh out of college. They're young, but they're young guys that have coached for several years. And I think that's an important part of this too, Trev, is, you know, they're adding quality young coaches. And that's where I think a lot of the Marcus Freeman effect is coming into play, Trev, is like there's a reputation. This is a guy that you want to, coach with and coach for. And, you know, and I've heard of some issues at times, and maybe we'll dive into a little bit more down the road, but there were some disagreements at times this year between the recruiting staff and the coaches, and Marcus Freeman would always take the side of the coaches. That stuff matters. And that stuff spreads. When they go to these coaches' clinics and these conventions and this stuff, that stuff spreads. You know who you want to work for and who you don't want to work for. And that's why you're seeing a lot of these moves happen for Notre Dame. And so just overall, I think the you know, I'll say this just from an on-field standpoint, Trevor, you knew that you were going to lose coaches. My final takeaway, they didn't lose as much as I thought they were going to lose. You know, Mike Brown turned down an NFL receiver's job. You know, I know that Al Washington has turned down some opportunities so far. I know that Marty Biagi's turned down some opportunities and overtures this offseason. Obviously, Joe Rudolph interviewed with the Bears. They haven't lost so far as many coaches as we expect. Now, things could change, but it's not going to change where, like, all of a sudden four guys are gone between now and spring ball. But for the most part, they didn't change as much. They didn't lose as much as I thought they were going to lose. And I think that some of the replacements they've had have been really big. And if Chris Ash is what we think Marcus is, what Marcus Freeman thinks he is, this is going to be a really good situation for Notre Dame. Very good situation.
The only other hire that was made that we haven't talked about yet, we'll keep it brief because we did have a segment on this in a previous show, was Mike Martin replacing Chad Bowden as the new GM for Notre Dame. Now, there's some different thoughts on what his management's going to be of the team. What we know right now is he's going to be in charge of or overseeing a lot of the duties with roster maintenance and maintaining the current roster, doing things in the transfer portal. Excuse me. And it's a big hire. I voiced my opinion on it when it was announced. I love the fact that they got an NFL guy with a background, in, especially with a team like the Detroit Lions, to come in and step into this role vacated by Chad Bowden. So for me, it's the other hire, the other big hire that was made this offseason. And Brian, you touched on it earlier. We're going to see more of his impact down the road.
Yeah.
If we all believe his impact is what it's going
to
be.
On the field, yes. Like, we should start to see an impact right away from a recruiting standpoint and an operational standpoint. But in regard to, like, how it impacts the team, it's more 26 and beyond. We won't spend a whole lot of time on this one, Trev, because we did break this down, like, very recently. I think our Wednesday show, right? I think is what we talked about at the beginning of our Wednesday or Thursday show last week. But my big takeaway is I love the direction that Marcus Freeman's is going structurally. The remaining big hire left is the recruiting coordinator, recruiting director, whatever they want to, whatever they're going to call it. That's the one thing out there. There's been some reports that somebody at Auburn was like the guy. That was a false report. That's another example of the media being used, or sometimes in this case, I think willfully being used to help a coach get a pay raise and to pump his own reputation, which is fine. It's part of the business. There was definitely interest from Notre Dame. I'm not going to deny that, but it was never he's the only guy, we want him so badly. Oh, geez, he turned us down to stay at Auburn. There were several candidates for this position. Marcus Freeman had not settled in on one guy just yet. And there are still other guys kind of working their way towards it. So, you know, to me, that's something I look at, Trev, and say that hire is going to be big, but that guy's going to work with underneath now the GM. And so Mike Martin is going to run sort of the overall operation of putting a roster together. And the things, there's a lot we have to learn yet, which is why we're not going to spend a whole lot more time on it. What's the relationship going to be like between his group and the assistant coaches? What's it going to be like with his group and the recruiting team? Does the recruiting team like work under him, or do they work for him? There's a difference, you know, and one way works and one way won't work. You know, you've got to hire someone that, and this is also where I think not going to a recruiting coordinator just yet could be good, because he needs to have a say in who that's going to be. That's why the whole "this is our guy" thing before Mike Martin was announced was always kind of, no, it's not what they're saying it is, because he was going to have a say in this. And that's kind of, it matters, because this guy's going to work with him very closely. He needs to have a say on who that person's going to be. And we're going to find out what that's going to look like. But I just like structurally, I like that Marcus Freeman's splitting that into two jobs. That's the one thing we said day one. I said, I don't know who the next GM is going to be or whatever the case is going to be. There's good candidates out there, but I want it to be split in between two roles. Would I have been happy with James Blanchard putting it all under one? Totally fine, because I think he would have been a home run hire in that regard. But I just see the way this is going, I see it the same way Marcus Freeman sees it, that this has to be somewhat of a split role where one guy looks at a bigger picture, he's into evaluation, he's doing this, and the other group is more of just the grind, the recruiters, the visits, the doing all that kind of stuff. And I just think that that's going to work really well together. And that doesn't mean the recruiting director won't be vitally important. I mean, that's where I want to go get the next Chad Bowden. I didn't want the next Chad Bowden as a GM. That's a different role than what Chad Bowden was great at. Chad Bowden is a grinder. He's an evaluator. He's a recruiter. Go get that kid. I still think they're looking to replace that hire directly. This is going to be more of an overseer on top of being a great evaluator. So like, I want people to make sure that they understand my overseer thing properly. I don't mean like he's just a decision maker and he's the boss of everyone, and he doesn't have like day-to-day responsibilities from recruiting and evaluation. I'm not saying that at all. He's absolutely going to do that. But what I mean is he's the guy that has to keep everybody on the same page. And to do that, you can't be the guy that's on the phone all day calling high school kids, calling their parents, calling their coaches. Like, that's what the recruiting director needs to be. You can't be on the road all the time. You can't be doing all that all the time. You need to be able to do that. But you also need to be able to have people that are doing a lot of that type of stuff. That's why you need Caleb Davis and Carter Allman, and that's why you need a recruiting director to kind of handle those responsibilities. And I would even grow that staff even more. Becca Seitz is someone else who's involved in a lot of that. You need those people. They're vitally important. And you can't be the one doing that as much as maybe as what Chad did as the GM. I think Chad was a phenomenal recruiting coordinator. I think you needed something different as a general manager in the direction that role, I think, is going in college football. And that was my big takeaway from that decision of bringing in Mike Martin. Because you're not bringing him in to be the next Chad Bowden. And I was told this by somebody. They're not looking to replace Chad with another Chad. And that wasn't meant to be a disrespectful thing. Notre Dame loves what he did. Marcus Freeman loves what he did. It's more so we're looking for a different type of person, because that's going to make it seem like it's not about Chad directly, but it's more so what Chad was great at. They're not necessarily looking for that same exact role as far as the day-to-day, the grinding, the recruiting. That's going to now be more of the recruiting coordinator. The GM is going to be a little bit different. So it's not that, oh, Chad didn't do a good job or what. It's just, it's going to be different than what the GM role was previously. And I think that's where they wisely are going with this move. And that's the big takeaway, more so than is Mike Martin good at it. We don't really know that yet. This is a different role for him, but everything I've heard so far has been great. Now we need to see how it plays out, but I just think structurally, I think that's the important thing that they're doing here.
So when you go through and you look at all the changes that Marcus Freeman had to overcome this offseason so far, and the important coaches to his staff, on the field coaches and off the field coaches, that he had to replace, do you believe that Notre Dame is now better off? Are they in a worse position than what they were in 24? Are they the same, in your opinion, Brian?
The answer, and I mean, you're asking this because I told you to ask it, and I think it's going to be an interesting conversation, and I don't know that I necessarily have a strong answer. I think at the very least, I feel like Marcus Freeman was able to keep it to where it's going to be a stagnation for the on-the-field product, okay? So what I mean by that is, if you look at just the on-the-field coaching staff, I think at the very least next season, you're going to be every bit as good as you were this year, and here's why I say that. Do I know that Chris Ash is as good as Mike Al Golden? I don't know that. That could be a slight step back. But the staff around him is now going into their second and third seasons minimum. Mike Mickens has been at Notre Dame since 2020. Al Washington was part of Marcus Freeman's initial staff, so he's going into year four. And Max Bulla is going into his second year as a full-time coach, third year on staff. So that's a lot of people that know the kids, know the players, know what Marcus Freeman wants, which is going to help Chris Ash make a smoother transition. But then I look on the other side of the ball. You're going into year two of Mike Denbrock. I expect an improvement there. You're going into year two of Mike Brown being the receivers coach. I expect improvement there. You're going into year three of Joe Rudolph as the offensive line coach. There's continuity now. Yes, you're losing your running backs coach, but you're bringing in the same guy. You're now going to go into, was it year two? Or no, it'd be year three of your special teams coordinator, right? Because Brian Mason was only here the 1 year, correct? 2022? It's only a year he was here. So you're now going into year three of your special teams coordinator. So there's a lot more continuity now than there was a year ago. Because a year ago, well, I shouldn't say that. There's enough continuity at other positions to where it can hopefully help offset the fact that you have a new defensive coordinator. Because you are returning your all coordinator, special teams coordinator, your head coach, almost all your position coaches, and then the one other position coach you had, like, because I don't count the coordinators anymore as position coaches. They're now just more coordinators. But, you know, Mike Denbrock still coaches the tight ends, but there's help there, you know. And it's a smaller position group. I mean, just the position coaches. You lost one. You made a great hire to replace him. I think at the minimum, you've been able to say we're going to be stagnant, right? And I shouldn't say stagnant is not a bad word. You're going to be on the same level at the minimum. And then if Chris Ash ends up being a good hire, then I think you're an even better staff next year than you were this year, not because you have better people per se, but because there's so much more continuity than there was within the last. I mean, it's a lot of turnover on offense the last 2 years. I mean, you had three coordinators in 3 years. You went from Reese in 22 to Parker in 23 to Denbrock in 24. You had an offensive line changeover from 22 and 23. You had a receiver changeover from 23 to 24. You had a new tight ends coach in Mike Denbrock, who's also the new OC. You had a new linebacker coach last year. There's been last year you were only going to year two of your special teams coordinator. It's been a lot of turnover. The moves this offseason were big in the type of coaches you lost, but they weren't voluminous, I think is the word that I'm looking for here, right? Or, you know, there wasn't a lot of them. You only had to replace two. And I think that's why I think at the very least you're here. Whether or not it's better or you've upgraded because of all the extra things is going to be determined by how well Chris Ash can replace Al Golden. If Chris Ash can keep this thing rolling, then I think Notre Dame is going to be an even better coach team next year than they were this year. because of all the continuity now that we see on offense. That can help overcome that loss. And if Chris Ash does a good job, because he also is surrounded by people that have been here for a while, I think it helps this thing keep rolling. So that's my final assessment. It's a bit of an incomplete because we don't know how Chris Ash is going to be, but I think at the bare minimum, the moves he's made is going to allow them to at least be on the same plane. And as we saw last year, this was a really well-coached football team. And so maybe the defense takes a small step back, but then the offense will take at least a small step forward. And that balances, you know, and if you don't have injury issues, your special team should be better. And that's the only thing that made the special teams a problem last year was injuries to your kicker. Not a lot you can do about that. Well, what did they do? Except here's a thought. If you lose your starter, have a pretty darn good kid there ready to replace him, which they did by bringing in Noah Burnett as the anticipated starter, but then bringing in also the freshman Eric Schmidt to say if for some reason Noah Burnett's not doing a good job or gets hurt, we're putting in basically a five-star version of a kicker and Eric Schmidt. So that they did address that, Trev. It was addressed. And so I think the special teams I also expect to be a little bit better this year as well. So I feel a lot better about where the coaching staff is now than I did going into this offseason because I knew we were going to lose Al Golden. I knew Notre Dame was going to lose Al Golden. I had a feeling that they were going to lose at least one, you know, like either Mickens or McCullough were going to be coveted. I thought maybe one would leave. I was worried you'd lose both of them. And they only lost one of them, and then the replacement was a great hire. And then that's it so far. So I think it's so far it's been a much better offseason from a coaching standpoint than I anticipate. So that's a good thing.
For me, when I look at this, I think at the minimum they'll be the same for a multitude of different reasons. One, for all the reasons that you listed. And then two, for me, I look at the personnel that's coming back from a player standpoint. And what gives me a lot of hope in Notre Dame's defense moving forward is you return a lot of experience on defense. There's holes that you have to fill. Xavier Watts, Riley Mills, Howard Cross, Jordan Clark at the nickel. I understand that, but a lot of those positions outside of interior defensive tackle have been really addressed. And even interior defensive line has been addressed to a degree. That's just one of the bigger question marks we have on defense. But I looked through, and when Marcus Freeman had to go through and hire some of these coaches, a lot of it was, hey, for 2025, we're kind of asking you to steer the ship here. We're not asking you to rebuild the boat. And that's what gives me a lot of faith here. I love the Juwan Siders hire. I do. But he is also similar to Chris Ash, coming into a very, very winning situation. Doesn't have to go out and find a new starting running back. You have Love and Price and Aeneas and Kedren and, you know, and then on defense, you don't have to go through and rebuild an entire defense, which is something in Chris Ash's career he hasn't done a good job of when he's had to rebuild a defense. But when you give him the tools, it's been halfway decent. So
pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So that gives me a little bit of faith. And some of the off-field ones, we're going to have to wait and see. But for 2025, I'm going to say I think it's going to be at least the same. Now, 26 and moving forward, that's where my question mark comes in, because you are going to be losing a good amount off of this 25 football team. So that's when I don't really know. But for this upcoming season, I feel pretty good about where they're going to be at. Now, last thing, I know you already talked about it. The changes that we're waiting on. I know you mentioned recruiting coordinator, a couple analysts. Anything else outside of those?
No, I mean, unless there's some move that now there could be some new positions created to work under the GM. That's maybe something that could be a factor. I mean, there's some things like that, but a couple analyst positions and then a recruiting coordinator is really all that's left. And those are big ones, and we'll address those as we get there. But I don't think that Mark, the one thing I have zero concern with is Marcus Freeman going to hire someone that can do a good job recruiting? Because that's something he has a giant passion for and understands is super important. You just look at the moves he made when he was at Cincinnati as a D coordinator, bringing in Chad, having Chad focus on defensive recruiting, and then bringing Chad here. He gets that. I have no doubt that he understands how important that is and is going to make a big hire. So I'm honestly not concerned about that. It's just we don't know who in this case.
Well, that's going to do it for part one of the show today, guys. But don't go anywhere. We have a big segment coming up, literally and figuratively. We're going to be talking about Notre Dame's offensive line, which would be a huge foundation piece for this team in 25. But before we get there, folks, please be sure to hit that like button, hit that subscribe button, hit that notification bell, share this podcast with your friends and family. Whichever platform you watch us on, we'd really appreciate a five-star review, whether that's on Spotify Podcasts or Apple Podcasts. And the best way to support what we do here is subscribe to the premium message boards at boards.irishbreakdown.com.